Shayla.
I'm Jamie.
And this is Show Me Scares. This is not a normal episode. As you notice, Jamie's here, not Terry.
Yeah, just me.
So here's the deal. Normally, we release our normal episode on Monday. This is coming out on Sunday. And that's because we're going to put the normal episode out a day late. So on Tuesday, it will come out. It may make it out Monday evening. There was a lot of research and a lot of digging that went into this, and a little more than I anticipated. And with the strain of work and stuff, it was just too much for me to try to get it all finalized for release on the normal date. So we're going to give you a bonus episode. So we started these bedtime story episodes where Terry tells me a creepypasta that she's picked out, or I guess I read it, but I have no idea what I'm reading beforehand, which is kind of fun. And instead of doing that, we thought, because we promised a ton of guests for October, and we've yet to do that too. Listen, October's been a shit show for me. So basically, I'm having a hard time delivering, and I'm really sorry. But we're doing our best to try to give you some of what we promised. And so Jamie actually has brought with her a creepy pasta. Double on the creep. Anyway.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. So Jamie's going to tell me the creepypasta that she has picked out, and I hope you enjoy this one. I understand that it's terrifying, so I'm excited and scared to hear it. So, Jamie, whenever you're ready, take it.
Awesome. This one is called A Peculiar Kind of Madness.
Ooh. Or Shayla's Everyday.
Oh, good Lord. Okay. I'd always known that my great-grandma was an orphan, but in late October of last year, she decided to tell me the truth about what happened to her family.
Oh.
Oh, it gets better.
Or worse.
Well, depending on how you look at it, I suppose. We were visiting her for her birthday. It was a tradition in our household, a road trip we knew in the back of our minds we'd take only a few more times.
Oh.
Right? Is that not like, oh, sad?
Yeah. You don't have to say it.
Yeah, well, you know, people like to be morbid like that, I suppose.
Yeah.
She was turning 98.
Oh, okay.
So that was just the cold, hard truth.
I mean, now I get it.
Well, it did say great grandma. So.
Oh, okay. I missed the great. I didn't know okay. How great she was. She is real great.
She's real great.
Okay.
So it was just the whole cold, hard truth of the matter. In my childhood, the journey to central Iowa had been a fun and lighthearted affair, but now my brother and my parents could only maintain strained politeness as we met up and hit the road together. Each of us knew that this trip might be our last.
Oh.
I couldn't even imagine. For several hours, we drove through vast open farm fields that stretched from horizon to horizon. I like that because I can picture it.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in Iowa.
Uh-huh. Well, I've never really been to Iowa, but I mean, if it's anything like Kansas, nothing.
Well, driving up through it, like when we lived in North Dakota.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So my great grandma's house was down a narrow dirt road off a wide dirt road off a gravel tractor lane.
Yeah, I've been there before. I lived there.
I was going to say, we lived there growing up. So, hey, as a city boy, it was more or less the most remote possible dwelling I could imagine. She was born there, had lived there her entire life, and would soon, well,
die there.
It's literally just that. Like, just, well.
That's interesting. You know, okay, so I hate to interrupt because I know that's super annoying when people do that to a story. But it's really interesting because Terry was just doing some research on a story about a man who was born in a house and died in the house. So like lived his entire life and then that died in the house. And then you
crazy.
Bring it up in another story. Like the synchronicity thing, I'm starting to like pay more attention to it since watching Hellier. And like when
I
stuff like that happens,
that up, like right away,
when things like that happen, I'm like, huh, that's interesting. We were
hey,
just
there's
talking
another one.
About because we were just talking about how weird that is and how that doesn't seem, normal. Or like something
or
that would
really,
happen often.
You don't pay attention to it
maybe.
On how often it happens.
Maybe.
But now that you're paying attention, you're like, oh, crap.
And is that the point of synchronicity? Like, is it really just your mind's paying attention now to something? Anyway, continue.
Moving on.
She was born there. She's probably going to die there.
Jesus. As we parked in an open, muddy rectangle and stepped out to stretch our legs, the consistency of the place surrounded me. Every single year of my life, this house and its land had been exactly the same. Does that not make you think of home?
Yeah.
The sky was open blue, the earth was a sea of waving gold, and the wind was a smooth river of cool warmth.
Ooh.
There was never anything to mar those three pillars of sensory experience except the house, the barn, a defunct old tractor, and the bell.
Ding!
The bell was a simple thing raised high on an old metal crook. It sat out in the field about a quarter mile away from the house, serving as a measure of the wind.
Oh.
If a storm was coming, the bell was supposed to ring, a necessary precaution in tornado country.
Interesting. I thought it was a dinner bell.
I did too when I first started reading.
Leave it to my fat ass to be like, it's a dinner bell.
Ding, ding, ding. Dinner's ready. But no, it makes sense now because if you're living that far out, winds are picking up because of a storm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, just listen to the bell ringing.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Get in the cellar.
That was so, like, hickish.
It was meant to be, so that's okay.
The only problem was the bell and its crook had rusted over long ago. Every time I got out of the family van from age 5 to 26, I glanced in that direction and felt a sense of unease as my gaze fell upon that decayed artifact. This time, at age 27, I looked over and saw that the bell had been scraped and polished clean of rust. It glinted in the sunlight, practically daring me to look at it.
Ooh.
I followed my family inside while struggling with a feeling of dread that I couldn't articulate. Who had cleaned the bell and why?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I want to know.
I tried to stop thinking about it as we gathered in the kitchen and said our hellos. My great-grandma was making tea and shooed off our attempts to help. She was a frail woman for whom movement was difficult, but she'd never let that stop her. This kind of threw me off. The Wi-Fi password is on a note in the living room.
She has Wi-Fi?
Right.
Listen, she's more with it than Nana, so.
I mean, yeah. For 98. Let's do this. So the Wi-Fi password is on a note in the living room, she told us with unquestionable authority. Go stare at your phones and the tea will be ready in a moment. That sounds like Nana right there.
She's like, this is where the world's at.
Go stare at your phone. Leave me alone. My brother and I did as we were told, but my parents turned on the television instead of looking at their phones. For a few minutes, we stayed in our separate worlds, only returning to the present when my great-grandma brought in the tea. And we had a nice time.
Okay.
I think that's kind of like foreboding. That night, when everyone else was long asleep, I happened to open my eyes and see a glow under the door of the guest room I shared with my brother. My parents were in a different room and would not see the same light, so it was up to me to investigate.
Well, you're 27, city boy. Get up and look. Sorry. Okay. You're a grown-ass man. Get up and see what's wrong.
Grow a pair. Go look. Quietly, so as not to wake him, I crept out and down, finding my great-grandma still awake. She sat in her big jade leather chair, her gaze on the television. She asked me without looking my way, you don't fall for this stuff, do you? What, like ads?
sometimes.
She pointed her thin little arm at the nearby couch. Sit. I sat.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to tell you a family secret, she said softly, finally looking in my direction. It's for you and possibly for your brother, but not your parents. Do you understand?
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't, not fully, but I nodded. You know, I was an orphan for a time, born in this house, lived with my family, but then raised by an uncle after it happened. She didn't wait for my nod. I was 10 years old that night. It was my birthday.
Oh, it's her birthday again.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just got chills because I realized that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you pick up stuff on here and you're just like, oh, whoa.
I'll be the voice of, like, obvious. Captain Obvious here.
My mother had gotten me a small cake about the size of your fist. I looked forward to that cake every year since we didn't exactly have sweets bounding about back then. It was 11 cents, so rather expensive, but my mother got one for every one of us on our birthdays, no matter what she had to scrimp or save.
Aww.
All year long, I saw Mary get her cake in January, Arthur get his cake in March, Eleanor in June, Clarence in July, then Ruth a week after Clarence. Then it was months and months until me, the odd one out on October 29th.
Ooh, close to Halloween.
Yep.
There it is again.
I was so excited for that cake. As the days rolled closer, as the morning dawned, as the hours inched by, I hopped around the house like a bunny rabbit. But I wasn't allowed to eat it until well after supper.
Of course.
Everybody's got to eat.
Can't ruin your supper with cake.
Well, I mean, we would, but... I stared at the clock, so I know. Yes, that one on the mantle there, the brass and chrome one. Same one.
Oh.
But I stared at the clock, so I know. Night fell at 6:41. That was the moment bright orange stopped glinting off that clock and my mother rose to light a lamp.
Oh.
She's got a good memory.
I love this.
She's got a good memory. Like, holy crap. I can't even remember something I did yesterday.
It sounds like there's some kind of traumatic experience coming, and so that's probably the reason she remembers it so well.
Oh, just wait. I looked up at her. Now, she smiled and shook her head. My brothers and sisters complained in a chorus in support of me, but she just shook her head at them. Too soon, and she'll ruin her supper. I was a little snotty, like, I was right.
I said that.
Father came in from the fields not long after that, dirty and tired as all get out. He ate in silence while we chattered endlessly about what type of cake it would be. Under the frosting, who knew, it might be raspberry, vanilla, or even chocolate.
Ooh.
We grew silent as Father neared the cleaning of his plate, an event which would mark the end of supper. 4 pieces of meat and bread remained, then 3, then 2, any moment now. He stopped at the last piece, holding it unmoving above the remaining dollop of gravy. We turned our heads. It was the bell. The bell was ringing out in the fields.
Oh, no.
Oh, brace yourself. Bell. Father grunted, then put the last piece of his food back on his plate before rising. He opened the front door. We braced ourselves for the wind, but none came. He spat on and held up a finger to the night air, then shook his head. He moved back into our lamplight and set. Arthur asked, "Is it gonna storm?" Mary asked, "Is there going to be a tornado?" That'd be me. Is there going to be a tornado?
Hey, is there going to be a tornado? I'm so scared.
I don't think scared would be what we'd be saying, though. No. Like, we'd run outside and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Mother shook her head, smiled at us, and told us not to worry. No wind meant no storm. But the bell kept ringing.
Is it a squirrel? It's a raccoon, I bet.
You just listen.
Okay, go ahead.
My father dipped his last piece of food in the gravy and prepared to eat it despite the constantly ringing bell. But then sighed and put it back down. He motioned to Clarence. Clarence was the oldest, so he understood. He was nearly a man himself, and tying the bell would be no problem. He grabbed a candle, protected the flame with his hand, and headed out the open front door.
Don't go, Clarence.
Don't go.
Those raccoons are mean.
Not as mean as possums.
Oh, okay. So it's a possum. Thank you.
Oh, my Lord.
Spoiler alert.
My brothers and sisters and I piled up to the window. Opening it, we found nothing but absolutely still, chilly air. We watched his little spot of light move out around the house and into the fields in the direction of the bell. The clanging metal sound stopped, finally. And the candle's little flame hovered next to it for a solid minute. "Why is he taking so long to tie it?" Ruth asked. Eleanor suggested, "Maybe he's having trouble making a knot. Knots are hard."
Oh.
We watched for another minute or two before, and I know how this sounds, the little flame in the distance began to rise. Slowly, smoothly, straight up. We followed it with our eyes, exclaiming the entire time as it moved out of sight beyond the roof overhang.
So it was a tornado. Great.
The bell began ringing again. "His knot must have come loose," Arthur said.
"But where'd he go?" Arthur.
There's Clarence.
Arthur, there is a bigger deal going on here. Oh, well, your brother just floated over your house.
Or at least the candle.
Well, still.
But I don't know how it was still burning.
With you.
Right? Our parents came to look at our insistence, but there was nothing to see by then. Father motioned to Arthur. Happy to help out, Arthur grabbed a full lamp rather than a candle.
Arthur's not very smart. Arthur.
He hurried out the front door, around the house, and into the fields while we watched from the window. The lamp was easier to see, and we were absolutely certain he reached the crook. As the lamplight hovered there, the bell stopped ringing. At that point, we had no reason to think anything was amiss. Maybe the wind had just blown a wisp of the burning candle string up into the sky and Clarence had gotten lost in the dark. He would see the lamplight, find Arthur, and they would both come back. The rising little flame we had seen had just been a fluke.
Sure.
Only problem was, staring out into the autumn night, we still felt no wind at all. We stared at that unmoving light for a strangely long period of time. What was he doing out there? Was he calling for his brother? Why couldn't we hear him, if so? Our parents looked away for a moment, and in that instant, the lamp went out. We children bleated, but by the time they glanced back, there was nothing to see. There was only darkness. The bell began ringing again.
Oh, God.
Getting creeped out yet?
Mm-hmm.
My father began grumbling, but there was no more sons to send outside.
Yeah.
He narrowed his eyes
Chicken
with thought.
Chicken shit, get up and go outside.
Oh, it gets better.
Oh, my God.
He narrowed his eyes with thought, then handed Ruth, the oldest girl among us, our main lamp. Our mother laughed. Ruth, be a dear and go find your silly brothers.
Oh, those silly boys.
Ruth was a little hesitant, but she accepted the lamp. Leaving us in darkness without it, she headed out around the house and into the fields. The lamp was brighter, and we could actually see her carrying hand and her white pajamas in a still, small lit halo. Why did I say still? God. On her way there, she regularly called out, Clarence, Arthur, you two lost? About halfway there, the other two lights had stopped. Her calls went instantly silent mid-sentence. Clarence, Arthur. And that was all they heard. It wasn't that she'd given up yelling. The sound reaching us had simply stopped completely. We could still see her carrying the lamp, still see her hand in pajamas, still see her turning this way and that. She even raised the house lamp near her face, and we saw her shouting into the darkness. We just didn't hear anything. Nothing except that constantly clanging bell, growing faster in pace and louder in urgency. Mary, Eleanor, and I looked up at our parents with fearful gazes. My father shook his head, speaking for the first time that night. So there's wind out there after all. The air is like a river inside an ocean. It's moving fast out there, carrying her voice away, but we can't feel it in here.
Okay, Dad. You're a chicken shit.
He's a meteorologist, apparently.
He's a lot of things.
My mother seemed worried, but she nodded and accepted that. We saw her accepting it, so we gulped and believed it, too. We all glued our eyes to that open window. Mama ain't got no backbone.
Women weren't allowed to at that time.
Well, that's
so
true, but I probably would have put my foot down at some point. I'm like, this is enough. Ruth reached the bell, and in that stronger light, it entered our view, unmoving, at the exact same time we heard it stop ringing. Ruth looked this way and that, clearly concerned. She seemed to silently yell a time or two before moving closer to the motionless bell. A half-tied rope hung from the crook, an indication that someone had attempted to tie it, but we couldn't see Clarence or Arthur anywhere near her. She put the lamp down on the ground to free her hands for tying the rope the rest of the way, but that mostly hid the light among the low-lying, recently harvested stalks. Mm-hmm. We waited, breaths held. The air held in my lungs started to burn. At long last, we were forced to breathe again. Ruth's light continued to sit there, barely visible between the broken plants. What's taking so long? Mary asked. Eleanor said, I hope she's all right. Father told us, she's fine. Damn kids are just playing a game with us. Our mother nodded in agreement. Eleanor, go fetch your sister, will you?
You're running out of babies, lady.
Eleanor shook her head. No way. It's scary out there.
Word, Eleanor.
It's just a game. You're not playing a game with us too, are you? No, Eleanor gulped. Then go get your sister and brothers.
Hell no, I ain't playing your game.
Tell them to come back in. It was pitch black out there and almost the same inside with us, save for one lone candle. Trembling, Eleanor took our last candle and crept out into the night, scooting along the side of the house to stay as close to us as possible. Shakily, she called, "Ruth, Arthur, Clarence, this isn't funny anymore." Now it was we who sat in the dark. As Eleanor began to move further away with the last of our light, we tensed. Father eyed the open front door, and Mother softly moved to close and latch it. Don't understand that.
She locked the kid outside now?
She latched the door.
Oh, okay.
I wondered what they meant by that move, because how were the others supposed to get back in? But I suppose they'd unlatch it if anyone came back and knocked. Mother moved away from us in search of more candles. Through it all, the bell kept ringing out in the dark. Increasingly scared, I held Mary's hand tightly and yelled out the window, "Be careful, Ellie." She must have happened to cross that invisible, silent threshold at that moment because she turned around in surprise and stepped closer. "I heard your voice go quiet, but there's no wind. Papa's wrong." She stepped away again. "See, when I pass this point, my..." She held up the candle to show us that her mouth was still moving, but we heard nothing. Come to think of it, her hair wasn't moving, and we hadn't seen Ruth's pajamas billowing in any wind. I asked Father, "What's doing that? What's making it quiet out there?" "It's just a game," Father insisted. "They're all lying. She's just pretending to make noise so it looks like she's being silenced."
Wow. Papa's a dick.
Yeah. Eleanor reached the bell. Father's grip on my shoulder squeezed to nearly painful. She reached down for the lamp Ruth left. Lifting it with one hand and holding the candle with the other, she approached the clanging bell. "See," Mary whispered to Father, "the candle's not going out even though she's not protecting the flame. There's no wind out there." "But the bell is ringing," he said gruffly, "so there is wind."
"No, there isn't."
Eleanor kept looking left and right as if she had heard something. Slowly she reached the bell, which was hanging unmoving from the crook, but we could still hear it ringing. Next to me, Mary...
Wait, the bell's not moving?
The bell's not moving.
But it's ringing.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're still hearing the bell. Next to me, Mary began to cry. It's a game, Father said angrily. It's just a game they're playing. Eleanor threw...
Oh, what? They have what? A recording of the bell in your house? You don't even have electricity. I'm sorry.
Let's explode a little more.
I'm very mad at Dad right now.
Dad's kind of a dick, like I said. Eleanor threw the lamp at something in the darkness. We saw the lamp crash, shatter, and go dark, but heard nothing. She raced towards us, candle in hand, but the flame went out because of her haste. We waited to hear her approaching or screaming, but nothing followed. The bell continued to clang. We waited in terrified silence.
All the babies.
Mother returned with a candle for each of us, and we set vigil at the window. Nothing and no one moved. For hours, the bell clanged without wind. The night remained pitch black. The bell clanged and clanged and clanged, driving deeper into our ears with each passing minute. Near midnight, we broke. Father was beyond agitated. "Mary, go find your brothers and sisters."
Unbelievable.
"Let's just keep sending out your helpless children." Like, that's smart. "No," she cried, "I'm not going out there." Mother glared at her. "You have to. This game has to stop." Urged on by both of them, Mary burst into tears and climbed out the window. Holding her small candle, she inched out into the fields. Her sobs went quiet as she passed the same point out in the darkness. Her flame reached the bell and the ringing stopped. Her flame snuffed out. We held our breaths. The bell began ringing again.
Ugh.
Father clenched his fists. "Go." I turned and saw he was looking at me. I suddenly realized I was the only child left in the house and I felt horribly alone. Everything in me shrieked against the thought of going out into that cursed night.
Yeah.
No. My mother wavered in place, no longer adamantly in line with my father. She began to cry too. "What are you doing?" he demanded. "It's just a game. There's nothing to be scared of." She screamed and demanded, "Why do you keep saying that? Why have I been helping you do this?" He grabbed her and shouted in her face, "Because we haven't been sending our children to their deaths. That's not what's happening." She pushed his hands away and ran for the window. Pushing past me, she tumbled out and ran screaming toward the still clanging bell. Not out of fear of Father, but out of terror for her children. Arthur, Clarence, Ruth, Eleanor, Mary, for God's sake, where are you? He growled and leapt out after her, yelling, "We didn't kill them. Everything is fine." They both continued shouting until they passed the point in the dark and all went silent, except for the bell. Twice more, it stopped ringing, and twice more, it began again. In panic and terror beyond reason, I closed and latched the window and pushed all the furniture against every entry to the house. I curled in a cupboard, holding the last candle up to my face as it slowly melted its way down towards my fingers. I was alone. Somehow, I was alone. We'd all seen the danger and stared right at it as it happened, but one by one, they had all gone out there anyway. I'd been surrounded by a full band of siblings my entire life, and now I was completely and utterly alone in a house in the middle of nowhere. By the length of my candle, it was 3 a.m. when a knock came at the door.
You don't ever answer a door at 3 o'clock.
I trembled, but did not make a sound. The knock sounded again, 40 heartbeats later. It was louder this time. I shook, holding my candle tight. The third knock was more like a tremendous crash or kick, and I heard the door explode inward.
Something like that.
60 heartbeats of silence passed, and then the floorboards creaked. Something in me told me to put out my candle for fear of it being seen through the cracks in the cupboard, but I didn't dare. No darkness. I couldn't handle the darkness. I would scream if I did, so I kept it lit. Smart girl. I wouldn't have been putting it out.
I don't know. I'm so scared.
Slow, quiet steps moved through the house. Whoever it was seemed to be pausing and listening at times. At others, they would rush forward to a random spot in a sudden frenzy and then stop abruptly. 400 heartbeats later, the bell began ringing again. But this time, it rang from inside the house. It rang from the kitchen. It rang from near the bed. It rang outside my cupboard. Clang, 10 feet away. Clang, 5 feet away. Clang, right up against the cupboard door, and then it opened. I sat expectantly, mouth open, eyes wide, as I waited for my great-grandmother to continue.
Kind of like I am right now.
After a bit, I realized that was it. But what did you see? She shook her head. That's not the point. I'm here, so obviously I survived, and a young man like you doesn't need to know what horrors walk in this world outside the paved cities of man. Gulping, I asked, "You're not just pulling my leg? This really happened?" Yes, her gaze went distant by television light. But here's what I want to tell you and what you should tell your brother. The thing that opened that cupboard door and stared at me from the dark, the thing that hoped to wait out my candle before the coming of dawn, had a bell tied to one of its teeth with a blood-soaked rag, such that it would clang when its mouth was opened for hunting. Somehow, some way, some heroic poor soul managed to tie a warning bell to the thing before they died. We heard that warning bell all night long, and yet my entire family walked out there one by one. We didn't listen because we didn't want to listen. My father knew what he was doing halfway through, but he didn't want to accept what he had already done, so he did even worse to continue living the lie. I narrowed my eyes. What are you saying? She grabbed my hand briefly. Fear will tell you to put your candle out, but your head will tell you to keep it lit. Don't give in to fear. You keep it lit, you'll get through this. Turning my head, I became aware of a sound in the distance. Is that the bell? I was so caught up I didn't notice. How long has that been ringing? She just clenched her fist and turned back to the television.
Well, okay, Grandma. What?
I told you it was more like a psychological thing that you're going to be like, what the?
So it's a monster that has a bell tied to its tooth.
That someone who got ate by it was like they managed to tie it on there before they died. To warn people.
Unbelievable.
I'm not going to Iowa.
Well, I didn't plan to. But so the bell stopped
when its mouth was closed.
When it was eating.
And said that it was open when it was hunting, and that's when you heard the bell.
Huh. That's terrible.
Right.
That's a terrible story.
I told you.
How creepy. So the thing is still there, apparently?
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, it's still out there. Just don't pay attention to the bell.
Keep your candle lit. Don't give in to fear is what her message was.
Which is why she's sitting up with the lights on in the middle of the night.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Why would you stay there?
It's all she's known.
Well, and I guess she, you know, beat it when she was what? I don't remember how old she was.
I don't think it said how old she was.
I don't think it did. Yes, it did. She was 10. So when she was a little kid, and now she's like, I'm staying here.
But
man.
I'm guessing from the
like,
order
I'm not
that they
scared of it.
From the order they sent the kids out, she was the youngest because she was the last in the house.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Wow.
Her whole family gone in one night because of some terrifying creature.
So it can't eat you unless it's dark?
I guess not.
Because, I mean, I have problems with the story. I mean, clearly, but every one of them had a light. And none of their lights went out. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, but they all set them down, too. They could grab them. They could grab them from up above where the light's not at.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, that really gives a twist to the game we used to play as kids that stay in the light. Because
God. That's crazy. That's so sad.
Yeah. But well, now he's hearing the bell as well, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I figured that'd be enjoyable because her birthday was October 29th. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they were
that's
there
very
for
good.
Her birthday. So
very, very good.
Monsters and creepy stories and death.
Mm-hmm. Grandma deserved to live to 98 or 150 or whatever she actually lived to.
What I want to understand is how she's lived that long.
Yeah.
Like, holy crap. I would have, like, had a heart attack and died.
I'm thinking the stress of that, yeah, would do you in.
But no, like, staying there after your entire family has been killed?
Yeah.
Like, what?
But, like I said, the night that it happened, she faced it and survived it. So then at that point, it's like, well might as well stay. I mean.
Right?
I know how to beat it.
True. Yeah. I guess that's also kind of like, face your nightmares. Stand yeah. up to them.
And then as soon as electricity was invented, she was like, wire it up.
Lights on all the time. Never turn them off. I'm going to sit in the living room and watch television.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Well, no matter what, keep your candle lit.
Don't give in to fear.
No. Okay. That's terrible. Thank you for sharing that. Actually, I really liked it. Oh, that was good.
Well, at least it's scary. Not dark outside, so you ain't got to worry about that.
It was creepy. It's the suspicion of it all that that keeps you like, what's happening? Until the end. And then,
suspense.
And then you still don't know. What did I say?
Suspicion.
Yeah, that's what I meant. It's along the same lines. It's close enough.
Oh, my gosh. But no, like, I read that this morning. I was like, oh, my gosh. Shayla's going to love this.
Yeah, I do love it. But then you still don't get to know, not really. Like, she doesn't describe the monster. Just that it's a monster with a bell tied to its tooth. And who cleaned the bell? Nobody. She didn't say that at all.
I don't know. My thing is, though, how big does it have to be for her to say it was a blood-soaked rag?
Yeah.
Like, how big of a tooth is this? I'm yeah. curious.
I know. And I think that's part of the story and, like, part of the writer's idea was, like, you get to decide. Like, that's your own monster.
The mystery behind yeah. it all.
Gross. Okay. Great.
We're
Thank
not gonna
you.
Go down any dirt roads in Iowa.
No. No.
No. Ever.
Well, guys, thank you for listening to this one. Hope you enjoy this bedtime story. And like I said, the episode will be a day late this week, but hopefully it's worth it. It's a ghost story that to me is one of the most terrifying I've ever heard. So it's comparable to Amityville and the Conjuring House with the parents, and I think it's comparable to that. It's much shorter, but I do think it's up there with those. It just doesn't get a lot of attention, and I'm not sure why. I'm still trying to figure that part out. But anyway,
I don't know why I wouldn't get a lot of attention either.
I think the Warrens didn't get involved is why.
Probably because everybody knows the Warrens.
Yeah, exactly. So if the Warrens were on the case, then it was going to be a gigantic, huge haunting. So
right.
Anyway, Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic week. We will see you on Tuesday, or you will hear us, I guess, on Tuesday. We won't see you. I mean, you could send us a picture. That's fine.
That's weird.
Jamie, thank you for sharing this terrible story.
Well, thank you for having me and enjoying my terrible story.
Yeah, we're planning on having some extra, so some guest stuff go on for the very last episode of this month, because it's one of my favorite stories ever.
Woohoo!
Yes. So it's actually a murder story too, which is weird for that to be one of my favorite stories. But anyway,
I can relate.
Yeah. Have a great week, you guys. We will see you soon. Love you so much. Thank you for listening. Share with your friends. Tell them you love us. We love you again.
Yes, we do.
Bye.
Bye.